Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here is your host, Daniel Meyer.
Right, welcome back to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Tonight we've got our Team New England is joining us along with Sean Olsberg, our regional director. Team New England with Dave and Brendan and their field staff have hosted some pretty amazing bear hunts this fall. And tonight they're going to be on here talking about it. So Dave and Brendan, welcome to the show. Sean, is you as well. I know we've introduced Dave before. Brendan, I don't think we've had him on here yet. So Brendan, you want to give your quick backstory on you?
Yeah, came on with Dave about 2 years ago when New England joined Hometown Heroes. Quickly came on as assistant director, and happy to be a part of it with Dave. Personal background, I joined the Air National Guard back in 2015, still in, and I've grown up in the outdoors and happy to be a part of the group and give back to fellow service members, PD, and now EMS and fire.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here. And then Sean's on because he actually earned this trip from last year's banquet. So whoever brought in the most donations that earned the most at the banquet out of our field staff was awarded a trip of their choice, and a New England bear hunt was one of them. So Sean got to join Dave and Brendan up there in New Hampshire, I believe it was, for a hunt back in September. And then they've hosted eight other hunts total with a few bears killed. We won't go into that. We'll let Dave and Brendan talk about that. But let's talk about the planning for these hunts. There's a lot that you guys put into it, a lot of resources that you guys need. So Dave and Brendan, do you want to talk about, you know, the early planning stages of these bear hunts that you host out there?
Yeah, I can take this. So the planning part starts all the way back when snow starts melting in the springtime. We have to go out. We do a lot of research using Huntonix, topographical maps, talking to different landowners in the areas we like to go bear hunting at. And studying the property is really key because there's a couple of big factors you need to have a successful bear hunt over bait. You need to be isolated away from a lot of people. So you want to be away from homes. You got to have water. Water is one of the key things. You have to have water, and you got to have cool area. So you got to have a, you know, darker area, water, isolated away from people. And once you have all that, you've got to find the right landowner that's going to allow you permission. We have to have written permission here in the state of New Hampshire in order to do a bear hunt over bait. One of the things, when you have all those things, one of the things we also take into consideration is how to get to the sites that we plan on getting to. Because one of the things we have to consider is we might have someone that might have mobility restrictions. So we want to be able to get some sites that we can get in and out of fairly easy. Once you have all that, that's just the part of finding a bait site.
So you bring up the written permission for the land. Are you guys mostly using private land, or is it some public land that you have available out there as well?
So in the state of New Hampshire, you can get bait sites to be put on state land and on federal land, but we use private land. So these are private landowners that we are going and asking permission from.
Yeah, I want to preface that by also saying New Hampshire is set up different than a lot of other states in the fact that all land is public unless it's posted, except for, you know, select areas within the state that are no hunting areas.
Okay,
find that in Texas, that's for sure.
No, not at all. So you guys are spending a lot of time, you know, finding this land. And then also with that too, you know, it takes building rapport with the landowners and them trusting you to come out and hunt their land. Not destroy their property and leave it as good or if not better condition than what you guys started with.
Oh, absolutely. The land that we have that we're hunting last year, we started off a couple of years ago on a probationary basis with that individual with one site, built up to two sites, up to three sites. With him, he was able to pass our information on to another individual in the same town. And again, we actually had two bait sites on that person's property. And again, it was probationary period. That's just something that these landowners want, is they want to make sure that we're the organization that they really want to have out there, and we got to earn their trust. With that, because everything went so good this year, it's opened us up to all the property that this landowner has. And his landowner and family have multiple trust and property around there. So it opened us up probably to another, I don't know, 600 to 800 acres of property throughout multiple towns that we are going to have access to for next year.
And that's a pretty amazing, you know, testament to you guys being great stewards to the land that you have. So, and then after you get the property, you know, you do your scouting, what's the next steps that you guys kind of go into?
So once we find the property, we've got a scout to figure out exactly where we're going to put the sites, how we're going to get into these locations, the trees we're going to put the stands in, how far away the bait barrel is going to be, different contours of the property. That will take, you know, sometimes a couple of days or not to figure that part out. From that point comes the fun part. And I say that because this is the heavy lift. It's when we actually have to start going to get our bait for the bear hunt itself. We actually have a gentleman that's actually been very well taken care of us for the past couple of years. That's Henry over to Bear Bait Solutions. He pretty much supplies most of New England with all the bear bait that comes into New Hampshire and Maine. We have
What kind of bait is that you guys are using mostly?
So Henry has just about everything come into his warehouse. What we end up using is a lot of cookies, but the big thing we use, and a lot of people laugh, is Pop-Tarts. Sean saw how many barrels that we had.
Yeah. And Bear Bait Solutions, they're a supplier, one of the major suppliers of all bear hunters around the country, right?
Yeah, Henry said that he's got another business. I believe it's either running out of Minnesota or out of Wisconsin, and he supplies a lot of the Canadian outfitters with a lot of their bear bait also. So he gets this, the bear bait is surplus food that might fall off conveyor belts or whatever at the primary food source, and or it goes out of date. And then he ends up purchasing it by tractor trailer trucks, brings it to his warehouse, breaks it down out of these big totes into 55-gallon drums or into buckets that you can purchase.
And with the bait too, you know, I remember as you guys were planning for this, you spent quite a bit of time searching for the barrels as well. How many barrels did you guys end up getting?
We do the blue 55-gallon drums that we put out there. Those get chained to a tree with some slack so they can roll them around. So each bait site has its own barrel itself. But when we actually start getting the bait from Henry over to Bear Bait Solutions, we don't purchase it by the barrel because we've got barrels that we use ourselves, and that keeps us costs low. And we get it by the skid. And this year we were able to, we probably started the season, we figured out with about, I think it was about 5,800 pounds we figured that we got from Henry, along with some other bait that we had left over, which brought us up to probably about 7,000 pounds worth of bait to start the season with. We get it in this big skid. It's about 2,000, 2,100 pounds in a skid. That's just full of just Pop-Tarts that we end up having to shovel out, pickaxe out, and put them into 55-gallon drums. After they're in 55-gallon drums, we'll end up, for storage purposes, we end up breaking them down into 5-gallon buckets to bring them in. So at any given time, we can have, 15, 20, 55-gallon drums ready to go, and we'll break them down into like 75 to 100 5-gallon buckets to be able to manage them and carry them in.
And then how early do you guys start baiting for the bear? Start putting the barrels out, setting up the bait sites?
So, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could normally a couple weeks before season, we'll get the stands out, get the barrels put out empty, and then legally in New Hampshire, we can start baiting on September 1st. So we get the group of guys together and head up with a truck and trailer and probably a couple other trucks full of bait and hit, you know, anywhere from four to hopefully 8 bait sites this next year.
You've got your bait acquired, the spots, and then you've got your bait sites set up starting September 1st-ish. And then what's next after that?
So I want to go back a little bit with the bait. So we talked about the Pop-Tarts, but the other part of it we get to is 2.5 gallon or 5 gallon buckets of frosting. It could be cookie dough. It could be caramel and all these other additives. So basically in New Hampshire, you can use anything for bait except for chocolate. You can use white chocolate, but you can't use any other type of chocolate products out there. So just imagine going out there, you're filling a 55 gallon drum that's out there and tied to the tree, chained to the tree, 5 gallon buckets at a time. And then you're just smothering it with frosting and all these other sweet components that we have that we're adding to it.
Basically whatever's going to smell enticing for the bear to come from wherever and start snacking on your bait site.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all food grade, so if you get hungry, you just climb out of your stand and grab the Pop-Tart.
Is that how you got your snacks when you were there, Sean?
Yeah. It was already there. My name was even on the tree. It's all good.
Just take a couple of handfuls before you crawl up in a tree stand.
Yeah. And then speaking about Sean being there, how do you guys go about selecting who's going to be on these hunts? You know, I know you guys in New England, you know, a lot of times you focus on people that haven't been on a trip before, and that's kind of, you know, the people that you want to have come out and experience what New England has to offer.
Yeah. So the first year we did this with HHO, we had 95 people put in for 4 slots. And then last year we had, I think it's about 115 people put in. We go through and look at each and every person that gets put in there. We'd like to offer our hunt to a lot of first-time hunters that have never been able to go out and shoot a bear or been able to get a big game animal. So it takes a long time for us. It takes several days for us to go through all of those individuals to pick the right people to be able to do this. It is a week-long trip. So we do have a lot of people. We do have a lot of backups we have to pick. I think we did almost 10 or 12 backups this year, and we almost went through all of them. To dedicate yourself for the whole week, a lot of people can't give up that type of time. So we go through, pick our primary members, get them selected, and we select early. We select almost, I think it's almost 2 months early when we select people, because we want to make sure that they know all the details and can commit to the trip. And unfortunately, we do have a lot of people that back out to the fact of, you know, maybe it costs too much to drive here or fly here, or just work or family situations that come up that they can't come here. Because it's a 7-day trip that they're coming up for.
Yeah. Just to add on to that, Dave, I think, you know, one thing is New England's kind of unique area in the country. So selecting those people that haven't been to this area is a very cool experience for them. And as I'm sure we'll get to later, you know, being in the White Mountains area, it's absolutely gorgeous. As well as bear hunting, you know, shooting a bear is not, you know, accessible across the country like whitetail hunting or other species. It can be a bucket list item for a lot of people.
Do you guys have a lot of people that come from out of state or out of the region for this hunt?
Oh, majority. There's well over, I would say easily over 90% of the people that put in, if not a little bit higher than that, are putting in from other places. I remember last year when I was looking, and we actually had someone come put in from, they're all the way out in Hawaii that put in for the hunt.
That's quite the journey to come all the way out from Hawaii for a bear hunt in New Hampshire.
So one thing, Dan, we've had people that come from other states and stuff like that and tell us that there's a lottery system in the state that they're in. Maine and New Hampshire is over-the-counter tags. It's very cheap for the tag itself. You have to possess the regular hunting license too, which is a little more expensive for out-of-state residents. But in Maine and New Hampshire, you just go and buy your license and you can go. There's no lottery that you have to put in for.
And that makes it a, you know, pretty desirable place to go hunt as well. You know, there's people that wait years to be able to draw a tag for, you know, whatever game it is that they're trying to harvest. And then for these people that are coming out of state, even, you know, the people that are there, the lodging that you guys have for this trip is pretty amazing as well. If you want to speak on that.
Yeah. So when we started off being able to bring people up for lodging purposes, we had certain things that we had to look for. We wanted to make sure that we had, an area, it sounds weird, but we wanted to make sure that we had an area that we could all feel comfortable sitting and hanging around after the hunt at nighttime, relaxing. So you needed a living room area that was going to be big enough. You needed to have an area to eat. So we wanted to be able to everyone sit down at a table and be able to eat together. So it took us a while to find the lodging that we have. And we were able to find lodging off Airbnb and talk to an individual. We're able to get that week from the individual. One of the issues that we ran into is we had to be open and honest with the homeowner and stuff, realizing that, hey, you're going to have, you know, up to seven people in camouflage. We're going to have firearms with us. There's going to be potentially, if we can't get the bear to the butcher that night, there'll be a dead bear in the back of the truck. It'll be all covered and everything, so no one can see it, but you just got to make sure that you're not offending anyone in the area that might be offended with, you know, hunters and stuff like that. So that's one of the things we ran into for a snag to begin with. But we have a nice Airbnb up in right by Loon Mountain ski area that's at the foothills of the White Mountains. That was last year and also this year. In talking to a coworker that I have, they offered us their camp, which helped us this year grow by two more people. So we have one location, foothills of White Mountain. The other location is over towards, I guess, the Vermont border, you could say, in next to our hunting areas that we're at. So we're running two different locations. In one of them, they're just both unique locations. One of them's more secluded in the woods around some other lakes and ponds. The other one's got the foothills of the White Mountains that they can see.
Awesome. What do you think of the accommodations out there, Sean?
Man, let me tell you. So that was my first trip to the New England region. And I mean, from the time I got off the plane in Boston, the drive, it was a beautiful drive up to New Hampshire. And then, heck, we went to Vermont, and we also went to Maine. And it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous area, all trees. You know, I'm down here in Texas where it's dry and brown, and everything up there was just green as could be. The people were wonderful. Little ski community. It's really nice, a real nice place. And, you know, you could just walk around downtown, grab a coffee and talk with the locals, and they're all happier there. Dave let me know that tourism is a big portion of revenue for New Hampshire, and they do it right. You know, they make you feel welcome from the time you got in. I went to Bass Pro, got my license, my bear tag, and even the lady at the counter was super welcoming, you know? So yeah, it was awesome. The accommodations are just top notch for sure.
Fantastic. And then, you know, so once you draw everyone and, you know, everyone's set, that's going to be going there, the people that had to drop out of the hunt for whatever reason, once you have the group solidified of who's going on this hunt, what's kind of your next steps with those people, you know, talking to them about the hunt? I know you guys and everyone within the organization's, you know, safety is their top priority while on these trips. So kind of talk to everyone about what you do with communicating to everyone, you know, what to expect, what to bring, how the hunt's going to go once you have that group confirmed.
Yeah. So once we pick the names, we do a group chat within a week or so of the picking of the names and lay out everything, what their expectations are. One of the things that ends up being one of the biggest reasons for cancellation is everyone's like, well, I'm just going to fly in. Well, that's okay and all, but as Sean can tell you, you know, it's a couple hour drive from the airport, and where we're at, there's no Uber. So you're not going to get an Uber to where we're staying at. But with that, the main thing is, how are you going to get your meat back? Once you kill a bear, how are you going to get the hide if you want the hide, the head, and the meat back? Because none of the butchers in New Hampshire actually end up sending that stuff back. They don't mail that stuff. So that kind of throws in a wrench into a lot of people on how they're going to transport their meat back to wherever they're coming from. The other thing we run into is people get picked for the trip, but then they don't realize the length of travel it's going to take. You know, if they're traveling from Minnesota or Wisconsin, you know, that's quite the drive getting back and forth. So even if they bring a vehicle, the cost of gas potentially that might be included, or if they're able to get big coolers and such. We've lucked out that a lot of times if anyone's driving, they'll find someone along the way and carpool. Not even knowing the person, they say, hey, you know, I'm from Georgia, you're from North Carolina, I'm driving by, we're just going to carpool together. So by the time they get to us, they've already spent, you know, 16 hours in a vehicle and bonded already and got that good rapport with each other. I know Sean hung out with someone on the way back this year at the night before they left down in Boston, and they were able to, you know, get that rapport that we always talk about, that we're proud of at the organization, that we can, you know, keep that relationship up with those individuals. From that to the gear list that we go over, the expectations on safety protocol. We hunt from tree stands. We don't hunt from the ground. So we want to make sure they're okay with being in a tree stand. We actually have a certain caliber rifle and above that we would require in certain ammunition that we're looking for in order to make the most successful hunt out there. We don't do any archery hunt, unfortunately. You're more than welcome to bring shotgun. You're more than welcome to bring muzzleloader, rifle. But again, it has to be a certain caliber to make this successful hunt. Bears in New Hampshire have a lot of fat on them, and they're very, very tough animals if you don't hit them in a proper location to put them down. So we want to make sure we have the most successful vital shot that we possibly can. We do a lot of training on pictures, videos, and stuff with the individuals way before the hunt occurs, and probably have 3 or 4 different chats along the way, I think, if I remember right, we did this year to make sure everything okay.
No, Dave, your team, man. Jim, you guys have a unique rapport with the New Hampshire Game and or Fish and Game Department, right?
Yeah, we actually, one of the staff members, Jim Juno, he's the retired major with New Hampshire Fish and Game. He's still a deputy conservation officer, and he's one of the staff members that I have. And with that, myself and Brendan and many of us know many of the conservation officers that are out there anyways, and they know of the organization from years past. So we have a very good working relationship with them. Fish and Game does come out and check all your bait sites prior to the hunt. We give them GPS coordinates. You got to give them maps and all the other required information. But no, we have a very good working relationship with our game wardens in New Hampshire.
So how does that work with, you know, given the GPS coordinates for you guys' bait sites? Do you guys do that online, or do you just have to email that in to the Fish and Game?
Nope, those are paper applications that you have to fill out. That usually takes me about a half a day because you have to have a landowner's copy, the permittee's copy, one goes to Fish and Game. I keep a copy for the records here anyways. And we end up having to, each bait site usually runs about 4 permits. So we have anywhere from 15 to 20 permits that we're running.
And these permits, you guys have to put the hunter's information for who's actually going to be hunting that site, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and that's why we pick so early, because if, you know, we get that late back out, you know, again, we understand family matters and things come up in life, but if we get that late back out and that, you know, that sign goes up on the tree for that bait site, we lost a permit. You know, we can't replace those names, so then we're, you know, out spot. So that's why, you know, picking these people so far ahead of time and then working through the list, hey, I can't make it, or, you know, getting that list solidified to put those final placards up and make sure everybody's going to be there is extremely important.
Yeah, unlike some other hunts where, you know, you might go in for a couple of hours, we have trail cameras, just like most people do when you're going bear hunting by the bait site to see what time the bear's coming in. If those bears are coming in 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we want to be there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and we stay right up until we can legally hunt, which is half an hour after sunset. So you could be sitting there for 6-7 hours keeping that in mind, a lot of people are like, no, my body can't handle that. Or, you know, if you've got to use a bathroom, well, there's two choices. Either you're going to hold it or we're leaving the tree and we're going out to the truck. But once you leave the tree stand, the bears can hear you. They're not very far away and they'll come in and you can't go back in. So again, being very honest with them, what their expectations are. And some people just, they can't sit that long in those type of stands. So.
Yeah. And then once everyone gets to the house and, you know, for the last couple of years, the Airbnb, what happens on arrival day leading up into actually going into the hunt?
So one thing that go back a little bit was setting up. Before we get to that point, we set up, we have to give credit to the people, a couple of other organizations. Bass Pro has been very supportive over with us and getting us the tree stands that we need. We have very, very large two-person tree stands. Sean can testify on how comfortable and how big these things are. It takes five of us to put up a tree stand.
Yeah, they are Cadillac style for sure.
Because you're sitting out for long periods of time. And, you know, if you're dealing with a disabled veteran law enforcement officer or whoever it might be, you want to make sure that you have comfort. It is paramount when you're sitting out there. So we got to give credit to Bass Pro and Kittery Trading Post that's donated tree stands to us in the past couple of years and the Marine Corps League out of New Hampshire. Out of Manchester has donated money to keep us supporting in these tree stands that we have, because they're not cheap. They're hard to get, but we have a special tree stand that we like and it works very well. So once people show up, the first night is basically going over the rules of the hunt and relaxation. Everyone that's coming in is either driving or flying. So you're jet lagged or you're, you know, maybe jacked up on Red Bull or coffee or whatever from your drive-in. So we don't hunt that first night. We do go over, there's certain rules from the landowner. We have to go over about no coming on the property after any time that you're not hunting with us. We go over pictures of the bears, where the vitals are to shoot. And we're sitting with them the whole time, Dan. So unlike other hunts with a guide where they drop you off, give you a walkie-talkie to call, each staff member is sitting with a hunter the whole time. So we're there to help them, guide them, say, nope, that's not a shooter bear. Yes, that's a shooter bear. Wait for that bear to come in. And for some people that have never hunted is, you know, reassurance that, hey, you're okay. That bear's not going to harm you or anything like that. And, you know, just keep calm and relax and, you know, just let your shakes go, because it's for some people have never seen a bear. It's pretty much an adrenaline rush. Yeah. But the first night's just very relaxing, going over what we're going to do. And then the next morning we go out and we have certain locations. We go out and sight in the rifles. We make sure nothing's been bumped during the time period of travel, and make sure that we're sighting everything. And most of our bait sites are no more than, the furthest one's probably 25 yards away. We're shooting most of them 18 to 20 yards away.
Sean, how was the experience for you? You know, getting there to the house, getting to meet everyone, getting to meet Dave's team.
Let me tell you, Dave and Brendan and their team, I mean, they run a class act operation. You know, everything was laid out. I knew exactly what to do, where to go, where to be. Typical military, right? Just tell me where to be and I'll be there. But then from there, it was just hands off and it was just relaxing. And you're going at your own speed. From the minute we got there, everybody kind of knew each other already just by talking over the past few months. You know, and then we got to meet all the team members and visit the different locations. And so everybody kind of got to see what was going on. My hunt, I drew, so not everybody hunted every day. We kind of rotate to keep the sites cold, at least one site. And so I was able to just kind of hang out and get to visit with other members during that first day. And then the next day, I went out, it was my turn in the seat. And, you know, from the time you get there, you pull up to the property, you get out, you get scent free, you spray. They got this spray bottle with like vanilla and it is the strongest smell you've ever smelled in your life, you know. But so we're spraying that down, we climb into the stand, And I guess I think we saw, what, 6 bears that day, Dave? I mean, little cubs would come up and sit there and eat Pop-Tarts, and you're so close that you can actually hear them chewing, you know? So that was pretty cool. And then they left, and then my bear came in, and, you know, Dave gave me the nod, and I said, yes, sir. Boom. And I placed a well-placed shot. Then we sat there and waited for a while. And then the scary part come, because it gets dark, right? So, you know, you've already seen 6 bears out here. And now you have a wounded bear. You don't know if it's dead. And it's like a swampy tundra area with ferns that are about waist high. And underneath those ferns, the bears have tunnels that go all the way all over in there. So Brendan, the blood tracker, he's better than any hound, I'll tell you that. We get over there and we start looking through stuff. And Dave's behind me with his 45-70 pistol and just kind of pulling rear security. And we're searching. We went back and forth and we found the bear and then recovered it. But that was scary. You know, you talk about the shakes. Yeah, I had the shakes from the time I sat in the stand when you get that bear in front of you. And then the scary part of going into them woods at dark, Brennan, that was insane, man.
Just waiting for...
I was going to say, when it gets dark is when all the big ones come out, too.
Just waiting for one of those bears to come to the bait site while you're down there with it.
Yeah, right. I mean, we had another bear came in. One day we were walking down there, Dave and I, and the cub was up in a tree. We could have just touched it. You know, it was crazy how many bears are in that area.
Yeah, the hunt that Sean had was a first for me in a couple things, and I've been hunting for over 20 years now for a bear. We had, like you said, we had cubs when we walked in. We had a cub there that took off. We had a set of cubs that came in there. We knew the sow was out there. The bear that Sean shot came in and actually ran the sow up a tree, ran the two cubs up the tree. So there's 3 bears sitting up in trees along with his bear on the ground. There's a water hole over to the right-hand side, and we hear a bear literally sound like it does a belly flop in a water hole. We can hear it swimming in a water hole. So now we've got a bear on the right-hand side, 3 in the tree, and his bear on the ground. He shoots the bear. He's very calm. You know, we look at everything. We're looking through with binoculars, making sure that his bear doesn't have any cubs with it, because some of the rules that we have is all the bears have to be over 100 pounds. They cannot have any sow. They can be sows, but they can't have any cubs with them. So we want dry sows or boars. So we examining everything, making sure this is the right bear. He gets the green light, and he has a window that's only about 3 feet wide that he can shoot. The bear steps into it, does a well-placed shot, runs off into what we kind of call hell, because it is nasty. It is thick out there. It's thick even if it's daylight out there. Bear goes off. We wait for a while, and you forgot to add this part, Sean. The cubs come, the sow bails out of the tree, takes off, leaves her cubs in the tree. The cubs come out and actually come to the bait site, and they're eating. What we have to do is now walk past those cubs to go start looking for his bear. So we're only 18 yards away. We go down the tree, get everything out of the tree. We're on the ground. Cubs are still there. They're not leaving. What was I throwing at them? Like gummy bears or Twizzlers or something like that, trying to get them to shoo them away, and they wouldn't leave.
Yeah, because you know that there's going to be mama bear is somewhere in those woods and watching those cubs. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, she's not going to be far away either.
Nope. Right.
So we had to walk by the cubs, 10 feet away?
Yeah. Yeah.
While they were eating, they could care less. They're young cubs. We walk by that. We actually go out and try to scout for the bear. And I said, no, we need to get Brendan in here. We need more people in here. When we were walking out, in order to make the phone call to Brendan, we walked by those 2 cubs again. They were on a tree and they weren't 4 feet away. We didn't even know that they were there because they were just clung to the side of the tree. I think that's when Sean started getting the shakes at that point in time. He got a little nervous.
When that sun goes down, boy, you know them bears are close.
Yeah, but I would say that's the coolest part of the entire experience, especially for me. I've never hunted bear, although I've been a part of this bear hunt trip. The, my favorite part is, and I think Dave does it on purpose, just to watch people shake. He purposefully puts them, the bait sites, 18, 20 yards away. When you could, you know, definitely put them further away. We like that up close and personal experience, listening to them chew, drag their nails across the barrel. The little bears, you know, hopping up on the barrel and rubbing their heads on trees like circus bears. You know, it's a great experience. And Sean had a absolutely fantastic night and got to see almost all of it.
Yeah.
So is that the, like the average that you guys are shooting at is like 20 yards? You guys are up in the tree about 20 yards from the barrels?
Yeah. And again, the North Country up there is so thick, you know, beyond our bait sites, you can't even see into the woods. So, you know, your furthest shot on a lot of our bait sites is no more than 25 yards. You know, that up close and personal, they come in, they're at the bait, they're eating, they take their attention off of you, and they're there. Once they're there, Dave will tell you, you reach in your bag, pull out a sub, you know, scent, as long as you don't smell like a human, if you smell like food, it's no big deal. You can pull out a foot long sub if you want. They don't care.
Well, not only that, I mean, Sean can testify to this. When we're sitting there and the bears are out there, we're whispering back and forth to each other. Nothing you can do when there's white-tailed deer hunting. You know, you move a little bit, they hear anything, deer are gone. These bears are out there and we're eating snacks. We're you know, shooting the breeze about things. The bear comes out, we're whispering back and forth. I mean, for us, it's a whisper, but to them, they can hear it. They're up there. They're looking up at us. They can't really figure out what we are or anything, but once they dedicate themselves to that bait site, they're dedicated and you can have the time to relax. It's not like, oh my God, there's a 12-point buck. I got to take a quick shot at it. I'll never see it again. You have a chance to relax and just be patient. Sean, what, those cubs probably sat out there for half an hour probably before your bear came in?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. They were digging in the peanut butter and I mean, why would they leave? I wouldn't leave. Shoot. A tub of peanut butter and a barrel of Pop-Tarts. Sign me up.
Well, it probably helps that you guys douse yourselves in vanilla or whatever it was that Sean mentioned earlier.
So I want to actually touch on that. So we actually have one of the other people I forgot to mention is a gentleman. His name is, I can't remember his name, but he has Wilderness Freaks up in Maine. And he provides us with a scent spray that we use. And this stuff is really, really potent. We used Caramel this year and we put it in spray bottles and we're spraying the trees and everything as we come in. This stuff is so potent that if it rains for a day or two, you can still smell this. You can smell the bait site before you even get there when we open the truck and it smells like caramel. We've sprayed so much scent out there. And scent's the key. Unlike whitetail and other animals where they can see you and they'll take off quickly, you can have movement in a tree. But the big thing is your scent control is absolute paramount with this. And you got to have enough scent out there to bring them in. Most of the bears that are coming to these sites are probably laying 200 to 300 yards, if that, around that site the whole season.
I was going to add to that, Dave, that we do what we call a sweet bait. So it's, again, the Pop-Tarts, the sugar. Some people do what we would call a stink bait. Fish, chicken, meat. Exactly what it sounds like. It stinks. There's nothing better than when you get in the stand and, you know, your bait's north of you and you get a nice north wind and all you can smell is caramel. That's much nicer than smelling a stink bait.
Yeah, that gentleman's name, his name is Tyler Dodge, that has that Wilderness Freaks, and it's an amazing, amazing product that he has. And it makes all the difference. And the other thing too, just like Sean brought up beforehand, you know, if you get the food grade bait on you, it's no big deal. It's food. If you get this stuff on, it's not like you're smelling like rotten fish. You're just smelling like caramel.
Yeah.
That'd be miserable sitting there for 6-7 hours just smelling a rotten fish and whatever else goes into that barrel.
Not a chance, man.
I've actually used stink baits prior to doing a lot of the sweet baits where you get clams, lobster, or whatever. Eat the food, leave the shells in a 5-gallon bucket, set them outside in August for about 3 weeks with a lid on, and then you crack that open and dump it on the bait. I'm not sure if I wanted to take myself out or take the bear out because it smelled so bad.
Oh, I'm sure your wife loved having that around the house for a couple months too.
Yeah, she wasn't a big fan of that. She's okay with me storing all the Pop-Tarts downstairs though in our basement.
So there's so many bears around New Hampshire, even at our house that we were staying at, which is in a nice neighborhood. A bear actually came up one night and paid us a visit, and Brendan happened to have a barrel of cooking oil that goes out to bait. Well, we set it outside, I guess, to, you know, keep it out of the house or whatever. And anyway, a bear found it, right? So there's bear prints walking down the street. You could just see, you could follow them all the way down the paved road.
Yeah, it was oil and peanut butter. You could see where they ripped the lid off and had their teeth on the side of the bucket, and it was just wet oil prints. I think it was a couple cubs and a sow, but just all the way back down the road to another house where it was probably trying to get into a dumpster.
Yeah, it was wild.
And then for the hunt, how many people did you guys have there again?
So we had four at one location. We had two hunters at the other location. We had three staff members at each of them. So the way we do it is we always want to have one location per hunting camp, what we call as a cold bait. So basically, if we have three bait sites for that location, we hunt two of them each night. So we hunt two, leave one cold. And what we mean by cold is mean no one's sitting there. Bears are really, really, really quick to pattern you. And so if you are coming in and hunting that site on a regular basis, or you come in and you don't smell appropriately and they smell human, they'll shut right down for a couple of days. And we had to do that. We actually had to leave a site alone to make sure that we could actually get those. It was a sow and two cubs. We actually didn't even bait the site, let it go dry to let her take off so we could get another bear to come in. Bears, they might seem like they're just out there wandering around, but they're very, very, very smart animals. Once someone shoots a bear, obviously they're not in the rotation anymore, and someone can actually hunt a few more times that week.
Yeah, I was going to add to that smart, Dave, in the fact that particularly the old dry sow, so a dry sow meaning she didn't have cubs that year or hasn't had cubs in quite a few years, they are very intelligent and they are also very old. Part of the process when Fish and Game checks in your bear after you shoot it is they pull what's called a milk tooth, and they send every tooth into the lab to age it. So the following year, you know, normally right before season again, you get the age, sex of the bear. And a couple of the bears from last year, which we had got before this hunt, I think one, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, was 17 and the other was a 15-year-old dry sow. So they're very intelligent. They've been around the block. They've seen a bait site. They know what's going on.
So yeah, those ones that have been around for a while, they're a lot smarter than most people would think. I mean, they've survived, you know, like that one 17 years of people hunting for her. So,
and it's not unheard of if someone shoots a bear that bear's been shot before too. The butchers will pull out, you know, broadheads, other chunks of lead out of them. They don't go down very easy. So it goes back to that right caliber, right location, shot placement and such. But it's funny, you see the amount of bears that Sean saw during the day and the other hunters that saw, once the lights go down, that's when bears come in. And we shared throughout those couple of months trail camera pictures. Now, we're just putting trail cameras out there. There's no bait out there. There's our old barrels that are completely empty, dry. There's nothing in them. But they're used to seeing that barrels. When they see the barrel, that means a dinner bell. So once we get the trail cameras out there, it's nothing to have, you know, 10 bears a night come in sometimes and just whack that empty barrel around. So we share those pictures. But we were lucky enough that out of all the people that were up there, we had a total of 30 sightings. Some of them were obviously the same bears, but 30 sightings across every single bait site that we actually had.
And you bring up, you know, make sure that people are using the right caliber rifle and everything. Sean, what was your setup for the hunt?
I was shooting a 45-70 Marlin Trapper with a Banish 46 from Silencer Central.
Yeah. Another question for you, Sean. How big of a grain bullet did you shoot and or add? How much did that bear bleed? Because, again, it goes back to that. Bears are really tough.
Yeah. I mean, that was a 400 grain bullet, you know, that at 20 yards. And their fur is so thick that it and they're so fat. So they can, the bullet hole can clog up, and I can understand why there are some bears that go unfound, you know.
Sure. And how far did your bear go before it laid down for good?
You know, I think it was about 80 yards in a straight line, but it went back and forth, and so we, you know, it felt like we were tracking it half the night, but it really didn't go that far, 80 yards.
And then how successful was everyone else that you guys had on this hunt?
So everyone saw bears, but there was only three bears shot. We had a couple of situations that occurred with heat. When it gets hot, and we had some very hot days where you're walking in a t-shirt, a big bear, you know, it's just like a human, you know, you don't want to be moving around when it's that hot out. So we're getting in a tree stand sometimes when it's, you know, 80 something degrees. For Sean, he thought it was nice and cool being from Texas, but yeah. You know, those bears up here with that winter coat that they have on and all the fat they put on, it actually slowed down some of the bear activity during the days, unfortunately, but we were able to get every person out to be able to see bears. Unfortunately, either the bears didn't present a shot, because if they're out there wandering around 50, 60 yards away, we want that bear to be in on the barrel, stop moving so you can get that nice broadside shot on that bear. So we did have an individual that passed up on the bear because he had harvested a bear beforehand. And that bear that ended up getting shot the next night from the other individual, I have to tell you about this. It's such a unique bear. There's a lot of bears in the New England area that have what they call white V's. It's a white patch on their chest. This bear actually had its brown nose, but then it had like a cinnamon color going down its chest. It had cinnamon eyebrows. It had cinnamon inside of its ears, and the whole backside of its ears were completely cinnamon. Something that's hardly ever seen around here. So it's very, very unique. And I have to commend that this hunter that passed up on it, he could have taken it all day long because it was so close and presented a shot. But since he had shot one beforehand, he's like, nope, I want to pass this on to another individual that's never shot one. So again, I love being with other hunters and stuff like that. That the sportsmanship really comes out. That's really important.
Having that sportsmanship is huge. You know, there's some places where you don't see things like that, and you know, then there's places like the hunt that you guys host where that's a pretty common thing. And then, you know, outside of the hunting, you guys also do kind of the tourist thing there around the White Mountains, don't you? Get kind of let everyone get the full experience of what New Hampshire has to offer.
We do the tourist thing when it comes to the food, and we do the tourist thing when it comes to the driving around when we're not hunting. Either it's not your night to hunt and we're going to go drive around, or we try to do a day trip, early morning trip with everyone. And we lucked out that we're able to get everyone up on top of Mount Washington. There's very few days, handful of days a year that you can get up there with wind not being high or visibility from being fogged in and such. But we're able to take the couple hour drive up and get in a big van that they drive you up on top of Mount Washington. Mount Washington's famous for it had the highest land wind speed record for many, many years. It's a mountain that for 9 months of the year has got snow on it. And a lot of places like Columbia and your sporting places test a lot of the gear up there. But we're able to get up there and they could see. I don't remember, Sean, how many miles was it we could see that day? Was it? Do you remember?
I'm not sure how many miles, but it was a long ways.
Yeah, because on a really clear day, I think it's seven states along with Canada and the ocean you can see from there, I think she said.
Oh, wow. So you can see a lot of things when you're up at the top of Mount Washington.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, that's a hiker. It's part of the Appalachian Mountains, so they it's a hiking destination for lots and lots of people. They have trails coming in from every direction, and there's trailheads all over, all throughout the area. So if you're a hiker, you know, and you're listening to this, man, go to New Hampshire. It's a pretty awesome place.
And then one of the camps was able to get some kayaks out because the property owner had some kayaks there. They went out, tried to get some lake trout on a local lake. And we also did some short hikes too during the week. And where we're located, we're 45 minutes from Maine. So no one's ever been to Maine, we'll drive over to Maine, get you over the border. You can take a picture of the sign, or Vermont, we'll do the same thing over there. Because the butcher that we bring the bears to is right next to the Vermont border.
It's also nice when you have your own resident tour driver in-house that can explain this mountain, that mountain, this trail, being the fishing game retiree that's, you know, say, you know, got people off that mountain and knows the significance of a lot of these places. So it's really cool.
Yeah. You know, driving around with Jim, who you're speaking of, you know, he had a story for every trailhead. You know, he served a lot of years in that department and did a lot of rescue operations. And it was really cool to hear his story and his experience as well. He was awesome at sharing with everybody.
And I talked about a few seconds ago about the local food. So we treat everyone when they show up to a drink that is well known in New England. It's called Moxie. I think Sean absolutely loved it and wanted to bring cases of it back home.
What is Moxie?
It can stay in New England. Yeah. There's a reason why it hasn't ventured out very far.
it tastes like, what does it taste like? Bad cough syrup, but either you love it or you hate it, but it's a favorite thing for Northern New England people. They love their Moxie.
It's like a orange sun-kissed with Robitussin. But what he didn't tell you is what we also had is lobster, okay? You know, lobster's a delicacy in every part of the country. Over there, that's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We were buying lobster for $6 a pound. You know, I called my wife. She's like, fill up your suitcase. Bring all the lobster you can home. Yeah.
So did you end up bringing a bunch of lobster home for the family to enjoy, or did you enjoy it all when you were there?
I enjoyed every bite while I was there. Yeah. You know, once I told my wife, I was like, well, they're alive. So you mean I have to kill them? Like, I'm afraid so. She's like, yeah, don't bring any home.
you say that, Sean, but we had someone last year when we actually went and got more food and groceries and stuff for the week. He came down with me and met with the person that worked at the deli. He had shot a bear, was headed home, swung by there, by the grocery store, and got a bunch of seafood. So everything's fresh. We're right next to the ocean. So he got some fresh cod, pollock, haddock, and stuff like that. And he also got a bunch of lobsters, but they'll steam them right there for you while you're shopping. So the idea was he was supposed to bring these lobsters home, and I get a message. He's not a couple of hours away, and he couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't put up with the smell anymore. Ended up pulling in someplace, getting some butter, melting it out of the heater duct of his vehicle, stuck it in his cup holder, and he's driving home, dipping pieces of lobster into his cup holder, the butter there as he's going home, because I'm not sure how much actually made it home. But that's the other thing too, when people come out here, if you want to bring seafood back along with your bear, we'll tell you where to go, and you know, the place will work with you on how to cook it and keep it nice and cold for you to get there.
And speaking about sending stuff home, so the butcher that you guys work with there, he takes the bears once they're processed, he ships them out to the individuals, or do they pick up the meat before they head out?
Nope. None of the butchers here, unfortunately, they don't ship anything here, any of the wild game that they process. The place that we take them to over in Orford, because it's nice and close to us, is Cotton Stone Farms. They're very, very supportive of us. We go there on their door. They have a HHO decal right on their door of their office that you're going to. They'll tell you stories about different people there, been there, that have been in the service and such, but nope, they unfortunately, none of the butchers here ship any of that stuff. But what they will do is make sure it's cut up to what is specified as quick as they can. And for anyone that's traveling with it long distances, they actually went in and froze it beforehand. So it's already frozen when you travel, so you don't have any risk of losing any of the meat.
Yeah. You know, when I mentioned hospitality, that the butcher was awesome. It's just a family operation. He invited us right in. He probably had 20 bears hanging in the cooler that he needed to get to. But for what we were doing and why we were there, he bumped everybody to the front of the line. You know, it was a 1-day turnaround. He froze all the meat. They made sausage at the price was amazing. You know, I think it was $100. He processed my entire bear and packaged it. So, definitely have a great relationship over there, and they took really good care of the meat.
That's awesome. Well, we're coming up on about an hour here. Dave, Brendan, Sean, anything else that you guys want to add about this hunt?
Just be prepared. People that listen to the podcast, if you're fire, EMS, if you're veteran, law enforcement, whatever the case, we fit in any of those categories, you want to put in for the hunt, we're expanding it to 8 individuals next year. That's just for the bait hunt. We actually ran three other hound hunts for bears too. So we not only do the bait hunt, we have the hound hunt. We're expanding more into Maine and might be able to see some more moose hunts for next year also.
That uncomfortable feeling you feel of traveling to a new place, I would say just take that leap of faith. And I'm sure Sean can speak to it better, but once you get here and settle in, and again, even my first trip, even as a staff member, was like a little, you know, this is our first, it's a week long trip, was maybe a little stressful, but it's the best vacation, camaraderie, and trip we do year round. And I can speak for myself, and I'm sure Dave, we look forward to this 11 months of the year until it gets here.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, if you'd like to travel, you want to see the country, you know, and even if it's not hunting, you know, go to hometownherooutdoors.org, check out the New England team, contact anybody on the team, and ask them what there's to do in New England, because it's just jam packed with things to do for tourism. So.
And then Dave, you want to give a shout out to the sponsors that helped you guys make these bear hunts possible again?
Yep. So the people that make the bear hunts possible is Henry over to Bear Bait Solutions. The guy's unbelievable for supporting veterans organizations like us, the Hometown Hero Outdoors and other ones. Bass Pro Shops for the tree stands, Kittery Trading Post for the tree stands, the Marine Corps League out of Manchester being able to support us with funds to be able to purchase bait and items like that. Tyler Dodge with Wilderness Freaks to give us the best scent around and the only scent that you can spill on your hands and you don't have to worry about stinking when you go home. The landowners, I would like to be able to announce them, but our landowners remain quiet behind the scenes for their own personal reasons. But our landowners, without them, they are unbelievable to us to be able to support us in what they're doing, giving us the land and being able to pass on the word and help us grow in those locations. New Hampshire Fish and Game for supporting us with what we do and being able to put up with all the paperwork we have to go through. And sometimes some of these game wardens have, you know, been off duty and come out with their, you know, just regular clothes on, or we meet them at a location to be able to tag in that bear. Cottonwood Farms for the butchery and all the members that show up. You know, we can't have the fun that we have it without the people that are showing up for the trip. It's a great time. We believe that you come there not knowing anyone, you leave there as a friend. We keep that chat group from years ago, and we're still chatting with each other to this day. You leave as a family.
And with that too, you know, that brings up the point, you know, talking with the individuals from, you know, previous hunts, there's a pretty amazing story from last year's hunt that we've got up on our YouTube. I'll make sure to link it in the description of this so that way everyone can go hear that individual story.
And absolutely, that was an amazing video that we had done from up here. And even if you don't get picked for the hunt and you're wanting to come up here and try it, which I've actually had some people reach out, we as staff members will tell you all the details on how to do your own hunt. It's a lot of work, but we'll tell you and guide you on, you know, how you set up a bait site, you know, good locations and items like that. It takes a lot of work, but if you want to try and come out here and doing it yourself, if you don't get picked, you're more than welcome. We'll help you give you the information you need to do it. Success is a matter of time and matter of location.
Yeah. So, you know, whether you get picked for a trip or, you know, you just want to go check out the New Hampshire, New England area, go on hometownhereoutdoors.org, find the New Hampshire or New England chapter and get a hold of Dave, get a hold of Brendan. Their whole staff's amazing. And with that too, there was, I believe, five individuals that they just had go through the assist training as well. So, you know, if you're going through a tough time, need someone to talk to, reach out to them, or, you know, send us a message on our page, and then we'll get you connected with Dave and his team if you're in that area. Even if you're not in the area and just want an ear to talk to, then those guys are more than capable and more than willing to help you out. Dave, Brendan, Sean, we appreciate you guys coming on. And if anyone wants to help out New England, go on our website, send them an email, and any support that you're able to give, whether that be landowners, donating items, you know, bait, things like that, they appreciate any support that they can get. So once again, we'll see you guys out on the water and in the woods.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.